Hi, it's Tony Reno. Thanks for listening to our podcast.
Yep, here are some of the best parts of this morning's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
We had a really busy week in Washington, D.C. Are you still there or are you back in Connecticut?
No, I'm back in Connecticut. Just got back last night after, yes, as you point out, a very busy week. And sorry I missed you last Friday. I had the incredible opportunity to take a tour underway with one of the Navy submarines that we build up there in New London, Connecticut. So I was underwater when we were supposed to talk last Friday.
What is that like?
Oh, it is unbelievable, Tony. You know, I'll tell you, every Connecticut resident should be proud. You know, these fast attack submarines, they're the Virginia-class submarines, are largely built up in New London, Connecticut at Electric Boat, and most of them actually are based up at Navy Base Groton. Now, these are the submarines. They're not the ones with nuclear missiles. They're the ones that hunt the enemy's ships and the enemy's submarines. And I got to tell you, I could talk about it for 20 minutes, but, you know, it's always amazing to see our military in action. These are incredible people doing incredible things, but it takes a very special kind of personality to be willing to, you know, be in a space that is like, probably like sitting in your front hall closet and being underwater for, you know, sometimes months at a time. I came away just thinking, boy, these are incredible people.
So apparently you don't suffer from claustrophobia.
Well, no, yes, I do. In fact, I'm not sure I would have lasted. Now, mind you, I'm 6'2", right? But I'm not one for enclosed spaces. I left that sub thinking, man, I would last probably 3 days underwater. And these guys, of course, go out there from time to time for 60 days straight.
Oh, 3 days! I don't know if I would make 3 hours. For gosh sakes, God bless you. That's great. We know that a national security advisor faced the committee this week following that phone call between President Trump and the president of Ukraine. Can you give us any details?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we're now in whatever, week four or so of the investigation of the impeachment inquiry. And it's not just the national security official who appeared with us yesterday, a gentleman by the name of Tim Morrison, but we've basically now interviewed, as part of this investigation, you know, pretty much everybody who was on the famous phone call that the president made with the president of Ukraine, and most of the people involved in Ukraine policy. So as you probably saw, there was a big vote in the House of Representatives yesterday that that basically just said it established the rules for the rest of this impeachment process, rules that are consistent with what happened in the Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon impeachments, and it called for open hearings. So sometime, I think, in the next 2 weeks or so, the American people will begin to hear from those same folks that we're talking about here, but it'll be open hearings and therefore televised. You know, people will have a chance to hear the facts and make judgments for themselves with respect to the president's behavior.
We're speaking with Congressman Jim Himes this morning. And Jim, I mean, do we really think that an impeachment will happen before we make the election process in 2020? I mean, do we really think President Trump is going to be out of office before we elect the next president?
Well, those are two separate questions. So do I think there will be an impeachment process? Yes, I think there will be. I also think it will probably be done and completed within the, let's just say, hard to say for with any precision, but in the next 2 months. I know that Speaker Pelosi is really hell-bent on moving this along really quickly in order to do two things. Number one, to get back to some really important things that we're working on, reducing drug costs, trade deals, etc. And I also know that she's really not at all interested in having this impinge in the election year. Now, your other question, I would tell you that there is pretty close to a zero chance that the Senate, remember, impeachment is a two-step process, right? You're impeached in the House, which is kind of like an indictment. If you and I did something wrong, we'd get indicted, and then there would be a trial. And what happens in the impeachment process is the House does the impeachment, and the Senate does a full-blown trial. I will tell you that the odds that the president is going to be convicted in that trial in the Senate are pretty close to zero. So this does, you never know in these days. Politics are a pretty crazy thing. But I would tell you that the probability that this results in the president's removal is very, very low.
So I guess maybe it sounds like a silly question to ask you, but does it seem like then it's a complete waste of time? Because what if he doesn't get reelected in 2020? Why even go through the process if he's probably not going to get impeached anyways?
Well, you're asking a very controversial question, Melissa, and I'll give you my point of view, and I'll try to do it in as least a partisan way as I can. There are very serious questions about the president's behavior and whether he abused his power. Did he hold up military aid to a country that, as we speak, is under attack by Russia? Did he hold up a meeting with the new president of that country in the White House in order to get that president to initiate a dirt-finding investigation on Joe Biden? If that was true, and again, the American public will have an opportunity to see in public hearings and form their own opinion, if that is true, that is a very serious abuse of power. And regardless of what the outcome is, it is important for the government to call out such potential abuses of power, because in the future, presidents will need to understand, and again, you know, the American people will have the chance to form their own opinions about that. But it is really important that when behavior, particularly behavior by the most powerful human being on the planet, is potentially bad behavior, for that to be called out. So I guess that's the argument I would make to you on the question of whether it's worth it if it's, you know, not going to go anywhere in the Senate.
Now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
All right. It's always our pleasure to speak with Senator Blumenthal every Thursday at this time. Senator, it's a pleasure to have you here this morning. How are you?
I'm fine. A pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me, as always.
As always, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Senator, you're calling Boeing planes a flying coffin. That's a pretty heavy statement. What prompted this?
What prompted my calling these Boeing planes flying coffins was the two crashes that claimed almost 150 lives a year ago, and my further claim that Boeing knew or should have known about the design defect in the computer program, it's called MCAS, that led to their crashes. As everyone recalls, these crashes were gigantic human tragedies, and the pilots flying the planes never had a chance because they were never told about the potential design and flying challenges of the computer program. And I said to the head of Boeing that his company deliberately concealed certain information. In fact, MCAS is nowhere mentioned in the 1,600-page training manual except for the one-time glossary of terms where it is mentioned. And so I was very critical of Boeing, demanding reforms in the certification and approval process and accountability to the families who lost loved ones, as well as to the flying public. And of course, the plane remains grounded because they still have not solved those design problems that led to the crashes.
So we know, Senator, that earlier this week, the CEO for Boeing went in front of the Senate committee. So I'm assuming that's when you talked to him. First of all, what was his response when you told him that this was completely irresponsible? Because quite frankly, I was kind of thinking the same thing. If they knew these issues were there ahead of time, why did they even let these planes take off?
There really was no justification, no persuasive reason for it, no convincing excuse. In fact, he said we made mistakes. He acknowledged that they knew about the design defect that led to the crashes in between the first and second crash, and yet they advocated that the planes continue to fly. Even after the second crash, they went to the White House and urged that the planes not be grounded, as other countries were doing. So Boeing really has a lot to answer for here, and so does the FAA, because it has failed to exercise its authority and provide full disclosure about its role. And I'm urging reform that provides for much more independence and rigor in the certification for safety.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, too, Senator, is I'm hearing this morning that a French news agency is reporting that up to 50 planes made by Boeing have also been grounded globally over cracks involving the Boeing 737NG. I have to be honest, we had last week one of our financial experts who has a pretty good handle on some of these trends. Now, he thinks it's the safest, you know, the best airline that anyone could use despite what happened this year. He and I kind of got into an argument over it because, quite frankly, I don't think you could pay me to get on a Boeing plane. Maybe I'm wrong, but, I mean, the fact that we're now seeing another 50 planes being grounded, granted it's not here in the U.S., why is Boeing still in business? I would think once you have two deadly crashes and they sit there and go, oh, well, sorry it happened, I don't think that's good enough.
the response so far has been inadequate in my view. Remember, Boeing is a great manufacturing company, employs tens of thousands of people in the United States, and it very simply has to do better. One of my colleagues at the hearing on Tuesday morning said, I'd rather walk than get in a 737 MAX right now. That was John Tester of Montana, and he does a lot of flying back and forth to Montana. So the point here is that Boeing has to regain the trust of Americans, the flying public across the world, by making sure that it holds accountable all the executives. It may be Dennis Muilenburg, I've called for his resignation, and others who were responsible for these design defects and the failure to tell pilots about the MCAS system that could have such deadly consequences.
Senator, you recently voiced your support for Scott Hapgood, the Darien man facing manslaughter charges. Why and what are you calling for?
Scott Hapgood is facing charges. In fact, he is defending himself against charges in Anguilla, where he fought to defend his family when an intruder not only tried to rob them, but potentially murder them. That's his claim, and he's being prosecuted in a process that, in my view, is unfair. He has been denied access by his legal team to the preliminary inquiry. The toxicology report was concealed for some time, and the toxicology report shows that the intruder, the attacker, had high levels of cocaine and marijuana. In short, I think the process in Anguilla has to be held accountable. Anguilla is a British territory. The British have to be told that all the rights and due process that would be enjoyed in the United Kingdom or in this country have to be accorded to Scott Hapgood. He's going through this nightmare with his family, a man from Darien who went to Anguilla on vacation with them and now has to defend himself against these charges in a foreign country. So I've written to the Secretary of State. I've also marshaled a number of my colleagues to help hold accountable the Secretary of State so that he can in turn hold accountable the British government, which has the real responsibility here.
Senator, we have run out of time, but we certainly do appreciate you meeting with us every Thursday at this time. Thank you so much. Hopefully we'll talk to you next Thursday.
Talk to you then. Thanks so much.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right. This morning, we're talking with Maritza Bond. She's health director here in Bridgeport. And Maritza, of course, we welcome you to the show. How are you doing this morning?
I'm well, thank you, on this rainy day. Good morning. Good morning.
All right. Pleasure to have you here. Yeah, you know, people just don't take the flu that seriously. You know, there's a lot of people that just are like, I don't need the shot. Don't worry about it. I'm going to be fine. But that is not the case. Now, you guys have a campaign going on called Fight the Flu. Tell us about that and let's see what that's all about.
Yeah, so we're kicking off our Fight the Flu campaign to educate and increase awareness of the importance of, you know, getting the flu shot so that people can prevent getting the flu. Last year, we had a major widespread classification issue with over 100 deaths, and so we want to make sure that we stay ahead of the flu season and encouraging individuals to get vaccinated.
Now, Maritza, what do you say to people who, when they get the flu shot, 9 times out of 10, I feel like I hear people go, well, I just got sick from the flu shot, and then they don't want to get it year after year. What do you say about that?
You know, we can tell them that oftentimes when they say that, I encourage them that they can become, that it really prevents them from getting a full-blown flu, which can ultimately lead to an untimely death. I mean, or another ailment like bronchitis, where many people suffer from because of their immune system. So I always encourage individuals that something could have been already lying dormant when they got the flu shot, and it will prevent them from getting a full-blown flu.
And can you actually explain to us a little bit, Maritza? My understanding is when the flu shot is created every year, you're using a different strain, basically, not you personally, but I mean, when the flu shot is put together, it's a different strain, almost the most popular one you would see or something. Can you explain, you know, because obviously you're not going to knock out every type of flu symptom, but you're talking about the most, I guess, popular that year flu symptoms that people are seeing, correct? Or am I on the
correct.
Right page?
So what they do is they create vaccines on strains that were prevalent from the previous year to ensure that they are going to be able to provide protection to the most that they can. So, of course, every year different strains, arise, but it provides the most protective factors for individuals. And those that are most vulnerable, it protects them even more. So when you are healthy, you may think you're healthy, but when you're around other people that have an immune issue or a chronic condition, you really can save another life.
We're talking with Maritza Bond, and she's a health director in Bridgeport. Maritza, do you have any advice for people tonight? Tonight is Halloween. For the most part, I don't know, it's going to be a rough one with all of this rain. But do you have any Halloween tips, health advice that you want to share?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I encourage everyone to make sure they grab their raincoats and their rain boots and take precautions when they're out. It's getting dark earlier. As you can see, it's pretty cloudy out. And so by 5, 6 o'clock, it's going to really be dark. So we're encouraging people to take precautions when they're out trick-or-treating on their trails to really just make sure that they accompany their children, that children are not left alone. We ask residents to leave their porch lights on. And then, really encouraging kids not to refrain from eating candy, especially those that have high allergies to different ingredients, to wait until they're able to actually read the labels, because oftentimes, kids are excited about the Halloween, and I think it's a great time to fellowship with other neighbors, but we want to encourage kids to take safety precautions first.
Okay, so Maritza, I'm going to ask you the official question that I think is on every parent's mind. How much is too much candy for your kid to eat?
I know. So, I'm not supposed to encourage sugar at all.
I know, right? So I'm going to put you on the spot. I don't want to be the bad guy. I'm going to make you the bad guy.
So I do encourage parents that if they're going to allow them to have a few pieces of candy this evening, to make sure they brush their teeth before they go to bed, because it can cause teeth decay if their kids are not brushing their teeth. And also just do, proper portion control. So not allowing the kids to, have the bags and have full access. So just kind of give them as treats throughout the month.
Okay. This may seem like a stupid question, but peanut allergies. Now, even though the candy is wrapped, when you're going to these houses and they're just throwing stuff into the bag, could that be a problem? Like a Snickers bar with peanuts in it, wrapped, could that be a problem? With the kids, sometimes all they have to do is just breathe that stuff in and they have a reaction.
Yeah, and so that's why I was encouraging parents to really be mindful of if your child has a high allergy to certain ingredients such as nuts and other factors that can create an effect. I encourage the parents to really be in charge of monitoring what's in the bag. And also encouraging those that are going to be giving out candy to try to just do nut-free candy so that we can try to avoid any catastrophic events out in the community, or just having your EpiPens for those parents that are going to have their child out tonight.
All right. Maritza, it's always a pleasure to talk to you and very, very informative. People want more information, especially about the flu. Where can they get in touch with you? Is there a website? What do they do?
Absolutely. So every Tuesday, we're providing, and Tuesdays and Fridays, we're providing flu clinics from 1 to 3, and we encourage individuals to visit our website at www.cityofbridgeport.com/flu, fight the flu, and they'll be able to get information about our flu clinics and also preventative tips on not contracting the flu for the season.
All right. Maritza, you're doing a great job, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.